Book 2. All the Takers of My Days. Well enough she faces away, walking past these dripping thrones. No one knows where the next foot falls. When we stumble in the shadows, our standards bow to wizened winds. I saw that look beneath the rim of blistered iron, and it howled to the men kneeling in the square. And the dogs sleep on in the cool foot of the wall. No fools there. She was ever looking elsewhere, like a disenchanted damsel. A shift of her shoulder sprawls corpses into her wake. No matter. There was a child dream once, you remember well. Was she the mother, or did that tit seep seduction? All these thrones I built with my own hands, labours of love thin over ragged nails. I wanted benediction, or the slip away of clothes, whichever bends my way, behind her back. Oh, we were guards then, stern sentinels, and these grilled masks smelling of blood, now sweat something old. We never knew what we were guarding. We never do and never will. But I swear to you all, I will die at its feet before I take a step inside. Call me duty and be done with it, or roll from your tongue that sweet curl that is valour, while the dogs twitch in dream like children left lying underfoot. Adjunct. Hair Ravage. Chapter 5. She was dying, but we carried her down to the shore. There was light stretched like skin over her pain, but it was thin and fast fraying. None of us dared note in any whisper of irony how she who was named Awakening Dawn was now fading in this morning's wretched rise. Her weak gestures had brought her down here, where the silver waves fell like rain and the froth at the curling foot was flecked crimson. Bodies bloated and pale fanned limbs in the shallows, and we wondered at the fitness of her last command. Is it suit to face your slayer? Soon enough I will answer that for myself. We can hear the legions mustering again behind the flowing wall, and the others are drawing back to ready their rough line. So few left. Perhaps this is what she came to see, before the killing light dried her eyes. Sheikh Fragment, Carcanus, author unknown. The black lacquered amphora emerged from the side door and skidded, rather than rolled, diagonally across the corridor. It struck the base of the marble banister at the top of the stairs, and the crack echoed sharp as a split skull before the huge vessel tilted and pitched down the steps. Shattering, it flung its shards in a glistening spray down the stone flight all the way to the main floor. Sparkling dust spun and twisted for a time before settling like flecks of frost. Withal walked over to the edge of the steps and looked down.
"That," he said under his breath, "was rather spectacular."
He turned at a sound behind him. Captain Brevity was leaning out from the doorway, glancing round until she spotted Withall.
"You'd better come in," she said.
"I was doing just that," he replied. "Five strides closer and she'd be a widow."
Brevity made a face he couldn't quite read and then edged to one side to let him pass. The throne room was still a chamber of ghosts. Black stone and black wood, the crimson and onyx mosaic of the floor dulled with dust and dried leaves that had wandered in from some high window. It seemed to hold nothing of the now brimming power of the Tarondarai, the holy sepulchre of Mother Dark. Yet for all that, Withall felt diminished as he stepped through the side entrance and edged out towards the centre of the room. The throne was on his right, raised on a knee-high dais that was, he realized, the vast stump of a blackwood tree. Roots snaked down to sink into the surrounding floor. The throne itself had been carved from the bowl, a simple, almost ascetic chair. Perhaps it had once been plush, padded, and bowled in rich fabrics, but not even the tacks remained. His wife stood just to the other side of the throne, her arms crossed, now dragging her glare from Jan Tovis, who stood facing the throne, as would a supplicant, to Withal.
"Finally," she snapped, "my escort. Take me out of here, husband."
Jan Tovis, queen of the Sheikh, cleared her throat.
"Leaving solves nothing." "Wrong. It solves everything."
The woman facing her sighed.
"This is the throne of the Tist Andi, and Karkanas is the capital of the Hold of Darkness. You are home, Highness." "Stop calling me that." "But I must, for you are of royal blood." "We were all of royal blood in this infernal city."
Sandalas Drukolat pointed a finger at Jan Tovis.
"As were the Sheikh. But our realm was and is the shore, Highness, whereas Karkanas is yours. But if it must be that there be only one queen, then I freely abdicate." "You will not. They are your people. You led them here, Jan Tovis. You are their queen. Upon this throne, Highness, only one of royal Tist Andi blood can make a true claim. And as we both well know, there is only one Tist Andi in this entire realm, and that is you." "Fine. And over whom do I rule? Heaps of dust, moldy bones, blood stains on the floor? And where is my high priestess, in whose eyes Mother Dark shines? Where is my blind Galan, my brilliant tortured court fool? Where are my rivals, my hostages, my servants and soldiers, handmaidens and... Oh, never mind. This is pointless. I don't want that throne."
"Nonetheless," said Jan Tovis,
"very well. I accept it, and my first act is to abdicate and yield the throne and all of wise Karkanas to you, Queen Jan Tovis. Captain Brevity, find us a royal seal. There must be one lying around here somewhere, and parchment and ink and wax."
The Queen of the Sheikh was smiling, but it was a sad smile.
"Wise Karkanas, I had forgotten that honorific. Queen Sandalas Drukolat, I respectfully decline your offer. My duties are upon the shore."
She nodded to Brevity.
"Until such time that other Tist Andi return to Karkanas, I humbly submit Captain Brevity here to act as your chancellor, palace guard commander, and whatever other duties of organization as are required to return this palace to its former glory."
Sandalath snorted.
"Oh, clever. And I suppose a few hundred of your Sheikh are waiting outside with mops and buckets." "Lethary, actually. Islanders and other refugees. They have known great privation, Highness, and will view the privilege of palace employment with humility and gratitude."
"And if I turn them all away?" "Oh, yes. I see the traps you've set around me, Jan Tovis. You intend to guilt me onto that accursed throne. But what if I am a harder woman than you?"
"The burden of rule hardens us both, Highness."
Sandalath cast Withal a beseeching look.
"Talk her out of this, husband." "I would if I thought I had any chance of swaying her, beloved."
He strode to the base of the dais, eyeing the throne.
"Needs a cushion or two, I should think, before you could hope to sit there for any length of time." "And you as my consort? Gods, don't you think I could do better?" "Undoubtedly," he replied. "For the moment, however, you are stuck with me. And," he added with a wave at the throne, "with this. So sit down and make it official, Sand, so Jan Tovis can kneel or curtsy or whatever it is she has to do, and Brevity can get on with scrubbing the floors and beating the tapestries."
The Tist Andi woman cast about, as if seeking another amphora, but the nearest one stood perched on a stone cup near the side door, now an orphan, Withal saw, noting the unoccupied stone base on the entrance's other side. He waited to see if she'd make the fierce march to repeat her gesture of frustration and anger, but all at once his wife seemed to subside.
Thank Mael. That would have made her look ridiculous. Decorum, beloved, as befits the Queen of Darkness. Aye, some things you can't run from.
There will be two queens in this realm, Sandalath said, coming round to slump down in the throne. Don't even think of curtsying, Tovis.
She eyed the Sheikh woman with something close to a glower.
Other Tist Andi, you said.
Surely they have sensed Mother Dark's return, Jan Tovis replied. Surely they too understand that the diaspora is at last at an end.
Just how many Tist Andi do you imagine are left?
I don't know. But I do know this. Those who live shall return here, just as the Sheikh have done, just as you have done.
Good. First one gets here can have this throne and all that goes with it. Husband, start building us a cottage in the woods. Make it remote. No, make it impossible to reach. And tell none but me where it is.
A cottage?
Yes, with a drawbridge and a moat and pitfalls and sprawl traps.
I'll start drawing up plans.
Jan Tovis said,
Queen Sandalath, I beg your leave.
Yes, sooner the better.
The ex-Lethary officer tilted her head, wheeled and strode from the chamber. Captain Brevity stepped forward to face the throne and settled on one knee.
Highness, shall I summon the palace staff?
In here? Abyss take me, no. Start with all the other rooms. Go on. You are, dismissed. Husband, don't even think of leaving.
The thought had not even occurred to me.
And he managed to hold his neutral expression against her withering skepticism. As soon as they were alone, Sandalath sprang from the throne as if she'd just found one of those ancient tacks.
That bitch! Withal flinched. Yarn! No, not her. She's right, the cow. I'm stuck with this for the moment. Besides, why should she be the only one to suffer the burden of rule, as she so quaintly put it?
Well, put it that way, and I can see how she might be in need of a friend.
An equal of sorts, yes. The problem is, I don't fit. I'm not her equal. I didn't lead 10,000 people to this realm. I barely got you here.
He shrugged.
But here we are.
And she knew.
Who?
That bitch Tavare. Somehow she knew this would happen.
There is no proof of that, Sand,
Withal replied.
It was Fiddler's reading, not hers.
She made a dismissive gesture.
Technicalities, Withal. She trapped me, is what she did. I should never have been there. No, she knew there was a card waiting for me. There's no other explanation.
But that's no explanation at all, Sand.
The look she threw him was miserable.
You think I don't know that?
Withal hesitated.
Listen, he said. Your kin are coming. Are you really certain you want me standing there at your side when they do?
Her eyes narrowed.
What you're really saying is, do I want to be standing at her side when they arrive? A mere human, a short-lived plaything to the Queen of Darkness. That's how you think they'll see you, isn't it?
Well,
you're wrong. It will be the opposite, and that might be just as bad. They'll see you for what you are, a threat.
A what?
She regarded him archly.
Your kind are the inheritors of everything. And here you are, along with all those Lethary and blood-thin Sheikh squatting in Carcanus. Is there anywhere you damned bastards don't end up sooner or later? That's what they'll be thinking.
Mael knows they've got a point,
he said, looking away, down the length of the throne room, imagining a score or more regal Tist Andi standing there, eyes hard, faces like stone.
I'd better leave.
No, you won't. Mother Dark.
Abruptly she shut her mouth. He turned his head, studied her.
Your goddess is whispering in your ear, Sand? About me?
You'll be needed, she said, once more eyeing the lone amphora. All of you. The Lethary refugees, the Sheikh. And it's not fair. It's not fair.
He took her arm as she moved to assault the crockery, pulled her round until she was in his arms. Startled, terrified, he held her as she wept.
Mael, what awaits us here?
But there was no answer, and his god had never felt so far away. Yedan Derig dragged the tip of the husked sword, making a line in the crumbled bones of the shore. The cascading wall of light flowed in reflection along the length of the ancient blade, like tears of milk.
We are children here, he muttered.
Captain Pithy hawked phlegm, stepped forward and spat into the wall, and then turned to face him.
Something tells me we'd better grow up fast, watch.
Yedan clenched his teeth, chewed on a half dozen possible responses to her grim observation, before saying,
Yes. The face is in the wash, said Pithy,
nodding at the eternally descending rain of light rearing before them.
There's more of them, and seems they're getting closer, as if clawing their way through. I'm expecting to see an arm thrust out any time now.
She hitched her thumbs in her weapon belt.
Thing is, sir, what happens then?
He stared into the lightfall, tried remembering memories that weren't his own. The grinding of molars sounded like distant thunder in his head.
We fight. And that's why you've recruited everyone with arms and legs into this army of yours. Not everyone. The Lethary Islanders can smell trouble better than anyone. Convicted criminals, almost the whole lot. It's a case of the nerves all around, sir, and soon as they figure things out, they'll start stepping up.
He eyed the woman.
What makes you so sure, Captain? Soon as they figure things out, I said.
What things?
That there's nowhere to run to, for one, she replied. And that there won't be any bystanders. No, what's the word? Non-combatants. We got us a fight for our very lives ahead. You deny it?
He shook his head, studied the play of light on the blade again.
We will stand on the bones of our ancestors.
He glanced at Pithy.
We have a queen to protect. Don't you think your sister will be right here in the front line?
My sister?
No, not her. The queen of Carcanus. It's her we're gonna die protecting? I don't get it, sir. Why her?
He grimaced, lifted the sword and slowly sheathed it.
We are of the shore. The bones at our feet are us, our history, our meaning. Here we will stand. It is our purpose.
Memories not his own, yet still they stirred.
Our purpose. Yours, maybe. The rest of us just want to live another day, get on with things. Making babies, tilling the ground, getting rich, whatever.
He shrugged, eyes now on the wall.
Privileges, Captain, we cannot at the moment afford to entertain. I ain't happy about the thought of dying for some Tistandi queen, Pithy said, and I doubt I'm alone in that. So maybe I take back what I said earlier. There could be trouble ahead.
No, there won't.
Plan on cutting off a few heads?
If necessary. She muttered a curse.
I hope not. Like I said before, so long as they all realize there's nowhere to go. Should be enough, shouldn't it?
When no answer was forthcoming, she cleared her throat and said,
Well, it comes down to saying the right things at the right time. Now, watch Derig. You might be an errant-shitting warrior and a decent soldier, too, but you're lacking the subtleties of command.
There are no subtleties in command, Captain. Neither my sister nor me is one for rousing speeches. We make our expectations plain and we expect them to be met. Without complaint, without hesitation. It's not enough to fight to stay alive. We must fight
determined to win. People ain't stupid. Well, forget I said that. Plenty of them are. But something tells me there's a difference between fighting to stay alive and fighting for a cause bigger than your own life, or even the lives of your loved ones or your comrades. A difference, but for the life of me, I couldn't say what it is.
You were always a soldier, Captain?
Pithy snorted.
Not me. I was a thief who thought she was smarter than she really was.
Yedan considered that for a time. Before him, blurred faces pushed through the light, mouths opening, expressions twisting into masks of rage. Hands stretched to find his throat, clutched empty. He could reach out and touch the wall if he so chose. Instead, he observed the enemy before him.
What cause, Captain, would you fight for? In the manner you describe, beyond one's own life or those of loved ones.
Now that's the question, isn't it? For us Lethary, this ain't our home. Maybe we could come to want it to be in time, a few generations soaking our blood into the land. But there won't be any time, not enough for that.
If that is your answer.
No, it ain't. I'm working on it, sir. It's called thinking things through. A cause, then. Can't be some Tistandi queen or her damned throne or even her damned city. Can't be Yan Tovis, even though she brought them all through and so saved their lives. Memories die like beached fish, and soon enough just the smell will do to drive them away. Can't be you, neither.
Captain, said Yedan Derig, if the enemy destroy us, they will march down the road of Galan. Unobstructed, they will breach the gate to your own world, and they will lay waste to every human civilization until nothing remains but ash. And then they will slay the gods themselves, your gods.
If they're that nasty, how can we hope to hold them here?
Yedan nodded at the lightfall.
Because, Captain, there is only one way through. This stretch of beach, 1,000 paces wide. Only here is the wall scarred and thin from past wounds. Only here can they hope to break the barrier. We bar this door, Captain, and we save your world.
And just how long are we supposed to hold them back?
He ruminated for a moment, and then he said,
as long as needed, Captain.
She rubbed at the back of her neck, squinted at Yedan for a time, and then looked away.
How can you do that, sir?
Do what?
Stand there, so close, just watching them. Can't you see their faces? Can't you feel their hatred? What they want to do to you?
Of course.
Yet there you stand.
They serve to remind me, Captain.
Of what?
Of why I exist.
She hissed between her teeth.
You just sent a chill right through me.
I asked about a worthy cause.
Yeah, saving the world. That might work.
He shot her a look.
Might?
True, you'd think saving your world is a good enough reason for doing anything and everything, wouldn't you?
Isn't it?
People being what people are, we'll see.
You lack faith, Captain.
What I lack is proof to the contrary, sir. I ain't seen it yet in all my years. What do you think makes criminals in the first place?
Stupidity and greed.
Besides those, I'll tell you. It's looking around real carefully. It's seeing what's really there and who wins every time, and it's deciding that despair tastes like shit. It's deciding to do whatever it takes to sneak through, to win what you can for yourself. It's also condemning your fellow humans to whatever misery finds them, even if that misery is by your own hand. To hurt another human being is to announce your hatred of humanity. But mostly your thinking is about hating back what already hates you. A thief steals, telling herself she's evening out crooked scales. That's how we sleep at night, you see.
A fine speech, Captain.
Tried making it short as I could, sir.
So indeed you are without faith.
I have faith that what's worst in humanity isn't hard to find. It's all around us, sour as a leaking bladder, day after day. It's the stink we all get used to. As for what's best, maybe, but I wouldn't push all my stacks of coin into the center of the table on that bet.
She paused and then said,
Thinking on it, there's one thing you could do to buy their souls.
And that is?
Empty out the palace treasury and bury it 10 paces up the beach. And make a show of it. Maybe even announce that it's, you know, the sword's gold, to be divided up at day's end.
And would they fight to save the soldier beside them? I doubt it.
Good point. Then announce a fixed amount, and whatever is unclaimed on account of the soldier being dead goes back into the treasury.
Well, Captain, you could petition the Queen of Darkness.
Oh, I can do better. Sister Brevity's the treasurer now.
You are a cynical woman, Captain Pithy.
In case saving the world don't work, that's all. Make getting rich the reward and they'll eat their own children before backing a single step.
And which of the two causes would you more readily give your life for, Captain?
Neither, sir.
His brows lifted. She spat again.
I was a thief once. Plenty of hatred then, both ways. But then I walked a step behind your sister and watched her bleed for us all. And then there was you too, for that matter. That rearguard action that saved all our skins. So now,
she scowled at the lightfall,
well, I'll stand here and I'll fight until the fight's left them or it's left me.
Yedan studied her in earnest now. And why would you do that, Pithy Islander?
Because it's the right thing to do, Yedan Derig.
Rightness. The word was lodged in Jan Tovis's throat like shards of glass. She could taste blood in her mouth, and all that had seeped down into her stomach seemed to have solidified into something fist-sized, heavy as stone. The shore invited her, reached out and clawed at her with its need, a need it yearned to share with her.
You stand with me, Queen, as you once did, as you shall do again. You are the Sheikh, and the Sheikh are of the shore, and I have tasted your blood all my life. Queen, I thirst again. Against this enemy there shall be rightness upon the shore, and you will stand, and you will yield not a step.
But there was betrayal long ago. How could the Leosan forget? How could they set it aside? Judgment, the coarse, thorn-studded brambles of retribution, they could snag an entire people, and as the blood streamed down, each body was lifted higher, lifted from the ground. The vicious snare carried them into the righteous sky. Reason could not reach that high, and in the heavens madness spun untamed.
Rightness rages on both sides of the wall. Who can hope to halt what is coming? Not the Queen of Darkness, not the Queen of the Sheikh, not Yedan Derig. Oh no, my brother strains for that moment. He draws his wretched sword again and again. He smiles at the lightfall's lurid play on the blade. He stands before the silent shrieking insanity of hatred made manifest, and he does not flinch.
But, and this was the impossible contradiction, her brother had not once in his life felt a single spasm of hatred. His soul was implacably incapable of such an emotion. He could stand in the fire and not burn. He could stand before those deformed faces, those grasping hands, and
nothing. Oh, Yedan, what waits within you? Have you surrendered completely to the need of the shore? Are you one with it? Do you know a single moment of doubt? Does it?
She could understand the seductive lure of that invitation. Absolution through surrender, the utter abjection of the self. She understood it, yes, but she did not trust it.
When that which offers blessing predicates such on the absolute obeisance of the supplicant, demands, in fact, the soul's willing enslavement. No, how could such a force stand tall in moral probity? The shore demands our surrender to it, demands our enslavement in the glory of its love, the sweet purity of its eternal blessing. There is something wrong with that, something monstrous. You offer us the freedom of choice, yet avow that to turn away is to lose all hope of glory, of salvation. What sort of freedom is that? She had held that her faith in the shore set her above other worshippers, those quivering mortals kneeling before fickle, carnate gods. The shore was without a face. The shore was not a god, but an idea, the eternal conversation of elemental forces, changeable, yet forever unchangeable, the binding of life and death itself, not something to be bargained with, not a thing with personality, mercurial and prone to spite. The shore, she had believed, made no demands. But now here she was, feeling the desiccated wind rising up from the bone strand, watching her brother speaking to Pithy, seeing her brother less than a stride away from Lightfall's terrible fury, drawing his sword again and again, and the first shore howled in her soul.
Here, blessed daughter, I am here, and with me you belong. See this wound, you and I shall close it. My bones, your blood. The death underfoot, the life with sword in hand. You shall be my flesh, I shall be your bone. Together we will stand, changeable and unchangeable, free and enslaved.
A figure edged up on her right, and then another on her left. She looked to neither. The one on the right crooned something melodic and wordless, and then said,
"Ween decided, Queen, Squish to stand with the watch and mine to stand with you." "And the shore and the day," added Squish, "listen to it sing."
Pully moaned again.
"Ye ain't knelled afore the shore, Highness. Ye ain't done it yet. And be sure ye need to afore the breach comes." "E'en the Queen's got to surrender," said Squish, "to the shore."
Crumbled bones into chains, freedom into slavery. Why did we ever agree to this bargain? It was never equal. The blood was ours, not the shore's. Errant fend, even the bones came from us. Empty throne, my certainty is gone. My faith crumbles. Don't my people deserve better? Pully snorted.
Single drop of shake in them, they hear the song. They yearn to come, to stand, to fight,
finished Squish.
But they deserve better.
Go down to the shore, Highness. E knew taint above the first shore.
Jan Tovis grimaced.
You think to force me, Pully, Squish?
If your brother
hadn't killed all your allies,
Jan Tovis said, nodding.
Yes. Oddly enough, I don't think he fully comprehended the consequences. Did he? 100 and more witches and warlocks. Yes, they could compel me, perhaps. But you two? No.
Is a mistake, Highness.
Didn't stop you feeding on my blood, did it? Made young again, and now you roll like sluts in every man's tent.
E'en Witch Slayer says...
Yes, you all say, kneel, O Queen, surrender to the shore, sister. You know the only person here who comes close to understanding me isn't even human. And what did I do? I destroyed the friendship growing between us by forcing her onto the throne of Dark. I fear she will never forgive me.
Jan Tovis gestured suddenly.
Both of you, leave me now.
As witches, we got to warn ye.
And so you have, Pully. Now go, before I call Yeddan up here to finish what he started all those months ago.
She listened to their footfalls in the sand and then through the grasses. Below, on the shore, Captain Pithy was departing, moving off to the left, probably making her way to the Lethary encampment. Her brother remained, though now he began walking the length of the strand.
Like a caged cat. But remember, dear brother, the hust sword broke.
She lifted her gaze, studied the hissing storm of light,
high above the blurred shapes of Leosan warriors. She was not sure, but at times lately she'd thought she'd seen vast shapes wheeling up there.
Clouds, thunderheads.
Rightness was a vicious word.
Is it right to demand this of us? Is it right to invite us in one breath and threaten us in the next? Am I not queen of the Sheikh? Are these not my subjects? You would I simply give them to you? Their blood, their lives? Errant's nudge. How I envy Sandalas Drukolat, the queen with no subjects.
The liquid sky of lightfall was a thick, opaque swirl. No thunderheads today. Seeing that should have relieved her, but it didn't. Upon the great spire overlooking Kolanse Bay, five Pures ascended the steep stairs carved into the crater's ravaged flank. To their right, as they climbed towards the Altar of Judgment, the slope fell away to a sheer cliff, and far below the seas thrashed, the waters raging into foaming spume the colour of mare's milk. Centuries of pounding fury had gnawed into the spire, down to its very roots, apart from a narrow, treacherous isthmus on the inland side. From above, foul winds bled down, pulled towards the waves in endless streams. At times, shriven had been poisoned in their pilgrimage, here on the weathered pumice steps, but the Pures could withstand such vicissitudes, and when they passed the shriveled corpses huddled against the stairs, they simply stepped over them. The Pure who was named Reverence led the way. She was eldest among those who remained in close proximity to the great spire. Tall even for a Forkrel Asael, she was exceedingly gaunt, almost skeletal. Thousands of years upon this world had turned her once white skin a sickly grey, worn through to bruised tones around her joints, including those of her double-hinged jaw and the vertical epiphysis that bisected her face from chin to forehead. One eye had been blinded centuries past in a battle with a Jaghut, a tusk slash as they struggled to tear out each other's throat, and the ferocity of that bite had dented the bones of the socket, collapsing the brow ridge on that side. She favoured her right leg, as the effort of the ascent shot lancing pain through her left hip. A Tlani Mas sword thrust had very nearly disemboweled her on another rise of stone steps, on a distant continent and long, long ago. Even as the flint weapon stabbed into her, she had torn the warrior's head from its shoulders.
The demands of adjudication are not for the weak,
she would say from time to time, whispered as something akin to a mantra, tempering true once more the iron of her will. Yes, the climb had been a long one for them all, but soon the summit would heave into view, pure and bristling, and the final death blows would be delivered.
Judgment upon humanity. Judgment upon this broken, wounded world. We shall cleanse. It is not what we chose for ourselves. This burden, in truth, does not belong to us. But who will stand to defend this world? Who but the Forkrel Asael can destroy all the humans in this realm? Who but the Forkrel Asael can slay their venal gods? The oldest justice of all is the justice of the possible. Hunter and prey, death or escape, to feed or to starve. Each plays to what is possible, and the victims strive to answer their needs. And that is all there is, all there ever need be. I remember grasses in the wind. I remember skies filling with birds from horizon to horizon. I remember weeping at the silence in the years that followed, when these furtive killers edged out into the world and killed all they could. When they walked ancient shorelines and thrust their greed like bone knives into new lands. We watched, we grieved. We grew into the iron of anger, and then rage. And now we are cold and Saturn. There will be death.
Steady breaths behind her, a source of strength, succor for her will to complete this climb, to push away the aches, the labors of a body as battered as the earth itself. She could remember the day peace was declared dead, the day the Forkrell Asael stood tall for the first time, and saw before them the future and the necessity they must answer. Since then,
so many unanticipated allies.
Above, seven steps away, the edge of the altar, the platform's white quartzite glistening in the thin light. Drawing upon her strength for this last effort, she pushed herself upward. And then at last she stepped onto the windswept expanse. The altar of judgment, white as freshly fallen snow, the carved sunburst of blood channels leading out from the center, cut deep, shadowed into darkness. Reverence strode forward, loosening her thick cloak as the heat bloomed up and out from the crater's mouth surrounding the spire, rank with sulfurs. Behind her, the four other pures spread out, finding their own paths to the center stone. Her lone eye fell to that blackened, rotted abomination, a boulder that was, or perhaps encased, the heart of an alien god. She could see no rise and fall from its mottled form, yet to set hand upon it was to feel its stubborn life.
The sky tore him apart, flung across half the world the flaming debris that was his body, and pieces fell and fell upon one continent and then another into the shocked seas. Ah, if there had been more, if there had been enough to annihilate every human on this world, not just the ones whose hubris was so brazen, whose madness reached across the abyss, to take this wretched thing.
Soon they would pierce the center stone, the heart, and that alien god's blood would flow, and the power would
feed us.
With that power, they could fully open the gate of Akrast Korvalain. They could unleash the cleansing storm, and it would sweep the world.
Drown on your hubris, humans. It is all you deserve.
Indeed, it would finish what the summoners in their insanity had begun.
You chain what you can use, as the gods have done to him. But when its usefulness is at an end, what then? Do you simply kill? Or do you squeeze the last possible drop of blood from the carcass? Fill your belly? Is there a use for endless pain? Let us see, shall we? Sister Reverence.
She turned, studied the younger woman facing her. In the few paces between them, there was a gulf so vast there was no hope of ever spanning it.
Sister Calm, if we are to hear naught but reports on the disposition of our armies, sister, was there need for this ascent? Need? Now that is an interesting word, is it not?
Calm's eyes remained flat, unwilling to rise.
The siege belabors us, sister. The watered who command are insufficient to the task. Whom do you suggest we send, Sister Calm? Brother Diligence. Ah, next to me in seniority. My closest ally, of course.
She turned to the slope-shouldered man standing nearest the heart.
Brother Diligence?
He glanced over, his pale eyes cold as the seas behind him.
I will break the defenders, Sister Reverence. None there can hope to stand against me.
It remains an option,
murmured Reverence. Again, Calm did not react. Reverence looked to the others.
Brother Abide?
It is known where blood soaks the sands, the mystic said, that other forces are arraying against us, beyond the glass desert.
We have other armies, said Calm, enough to meet and defeat each one.
Sister Calm is correct, added Sister Equity. Brother Diligence can destroy the humans who by treachery gained the North Keep, and indeed he can return in time for us to meet the new threats from the West.
But only if we do not linger too long in reaching a decision, said Calm.
And so it divides. Brother Diligence?
The risk remains, the warrior said, that we have underestimated the commander of those invaders. After all, they appeared as if from nowhere, and their successes to date have been impressive.
From nowhere, yes, muttered Brother Abide. Cause for dismay, a warren, most certainly. But to guide an entire army through? Sister Calm and Sister Equity, we cannot discount the possibility of those in the keep simply leaving the way they came, should matters prove too precipitous. In which case, when and where will they reappear?
A valid point, said Diligence. For as long as they are held in place, they are no threat to us.
Even so, countered Calm, your presence and command of our besieging army will ensure that you can respond to anything unexpected. There will come a time, there must come a time, when it is expedient to drive them from the keep and, if possible, annihilate them.
Indeed there will, agreed Reverence. But as Brother Abide has noted before, we are not yet certain that we have accounted for all the threats assembling against us.
She gestured.
The Great Spire, the Altar of Judgment, this is where we remain the most vulnerable. Diligence in command of the Spire army ensures the Spire and the Heart hold inviolate.
She paused, fixed her single eye upon Sister Calm.
Our remaining Pures command the outlying armies inland. Do you suggest that, in the end, they shall prove unequal to the task? Sister Belai, Sister Freedom, Brothers Grave, Serenity, and Aloft, which of them falters in your regard?
Calm glanced away.
I hold that it is best to eliminate each threat as it arises, Sister Reverence.
Reverence frowned.
And should the enemy in the keep vanish as mysteriously as it arrived, only to perhaps reappear here, at the very foot of the Great Spire? With Brother Diligence stranded at the far end of Estoban's valley, what then?
She asked.
Yes, best we argue here, alone, beyond the hearing of our watered and shriven servants.
She resumed, this time taking in all the others.
All of Kolantz has been cleansed. How could we have done otherwise, when upon reaching these shores we witnessed the terrible damage done to this land? Estoban's remains. Because for the moment we require that it do so, to feed the shriven and watered. When the heart is sacrificed upon this altar, brothers and sisters, even our need for human armies will be at an end. The end of the human world begins here. We must protect this place above all others, even Estoban's. Do any of you deny this?
Silence. Reverence met Calm's gaze.
Sister Calm, in the name of your ancestors, patience.
At that, there was finally a response. Calm's face tightened, and she rocked as if struck. Satisfied, Reverence blithely continued,
All that is required is in motion, even as we speak. There will be rain before the storm.
There must be. I ask that you set out once more upon the dead lands, that you be our eyes so set as to forewarn us, should any threat emerge from an unexpected quarter.
She gestured.
Indeed, take Sister Equity with you.
Sound tactic, said Brother Diligence with a dry smile.
Calm bowed stiffly.
As you wish, Sister Reverence.
Catching something avid in the younger woman's eyes, Reverence frowned, suddenly uneasy.
Ah, have I been anticipated here? Have I stepped blind into a trap? You wish to be sent out into the wastes calm. Why? What am I unleashing?
Our disposition, Sister Reverence?
Curious, she nodded.
As you desire.
Sister Equity shall take the Southlands, then, while I journey into the West.
Again? And what did you do there the first time out? What did you find?
Very well, Reverence said. Now, we stand upon the altar of judgment, once more united in our endeavors, with humility.
Blessed Pures!
The shout came from the edge of the stairs, and they turned to see Watered amiss, his face flame-flashed with exertion. They had left him at the third landing, against the eastern flank of the spire. Reverence strode towards him.
Brother, what word do you bring us with such haste?
He stumbled onto the altar and pointed to the east.
Blessed Pures! In the harbour, ships! Many, many ships!
Reverence noted the alarm and consternation in the faces of her kin, and felt a surge of satisfaction.
Yes, unseen threats assail you all now. Brother Diligence, assemble the defenders and awaken our warren in the watered sub-commanders. Akrast Corvalane shall be our bristling wall this day. And Sister Reverence? Ah, well, perhaps she will be the gate.
Calm and Equity had rushed to the eastern edge of the altar. Both stared for a moment before Equity turned round.
Ships of war, kin, grey as wolves upon the water.
Shall we descend and greet them?
Reverence asked. Brother Diligence's smile was cruel and hard. He knelt in the midst of chaos. Pressures descended upon him, seeking to crack his bones. Torrid winds clawed at him, hungry to shred his soul. But he had walked here of his own accord. In his heart, such savage challenge as to face down the abyss itself.
All is not bound to fate. It must not be. All is not carved in stone, buried deep and forever beyond mortal sight. There must be more. In all the worlds, the solid laws are a prison, and I will see us freed.
He had met chaos with fury in his being. A bristling armor of rage, proof against all it flung at him. He had walked into the maelstrom seas of madness and held tight to his own sanity. And then at last he had stood unbowed, alone, and argued against the universe itself. The laws that were lies, the proofs that were false. Stone a hand could pass through, water that could be breathed, air as impenetrable as a wall. Fire to quench the deadliest thirst, light that blinded, darkness that revealed. The beast within that was the heart of dignity, the sentient self that was purest savagery. In life, the secret codes of death, in death, the seeds of life. He had spoken with the elemental forces of nature, argued without relent. He had defended his right to an existence torn loose from these dread, unknowable horrors. For his efforts, the blind uncertainty of chaos had besieged him. How long? Centuries? Millennia? Now he knelt, battered, his armor shattered, wounds bleeding, and still it assailed him, sought to tear him apart. The fissure that erupted from him first emerged from the center of his head, a blast of argent fire in which he heard manic laughter. With terrible ripping sounds, the rent worked its way down his body, unfolding his throat, peeling back each side. His breastbone cracked in two, ribs bursting free, his stomach opened, spilling bitter fluids. Then there was nothing. For how long, he never knew. When cognizance returned to him, he was standing where he had stood before, and before him two naked figures knelt, heads bowed, a man, a woman.
"My children, born of anguish and need, my ever facile twins, my wretched faces of freedom, chaos answers with its most delicious joke. Pull and prod, you godlings, you will never know what I lost in making you this vicious bargain with uncertainty. I will give you worlds, yet not one shall be your home. You are cursed to wander through them, trapped in your eternal games. Lord and Lady of Chance, in the language of the Asathanai, upon. My children, you shall never forgive me. Nor do I deserve forgiveness. The laws are not what they seem. Order is an illusion. It hides its lies in your very eyes, deceiving all they see. Because to see is to change that which is seen. No, none of us will ever see true. We cannot. It is impossible. I give you a life without answers, my children. Walk the realms, spread the word in your illimitable way, upon. Some will welcome you, others will not. And that, dear ones, is the joke on them and on us. I had a thought. Now see what it made.
Is this senility?
The cavern shed its fluids, an incessant trickle and drizzle. The air stank of pain. Sechul Lath glanced over.
You spoke, Erastus?
You were far away. Memories haunting you, Sech?
They sat on boulders, the two of them, the plumes of their breaths drifting like smoke. From somewhere in the cavern's depths came the sound of rushing water.
Hardly. After all, as you are ever quick to point out, I am a man of modest achievements.
Not a man, a god. Making your pathetic deeds even more embarrassing.
Yes, Sechul Lath agreed, nodding. I have many regrets.
Only fools know regret, Erastus said, only to undermine his assertion as he unconsciously reached up towards his gaping eye socket.
The brush of his fingers, the flinch of muscles in his cheek. Hiding a smile, Sechul Lath looked away. Kilmandaros still sat hunched, almost folded over in the dripping blood rain of the Otateral dragon. When exhaustion took her, the period of recovery could be long, interminably so in the eyes of the errant. Even worse, she was not yet done with this. Lifting his gaze, Sechul Lath studied the dragon, Corabas.
She is the one law amidst the chaos of the Elaint. She is the denial of their power. She is the will set free. It's not enough to bleed her. She needs to die. And not even Kilmandaros can do that. Not with this one. At least not now, while the gate is still sealed. She needs to die, but she must first be freed. Against the madness of such contradictions, I wagered my very life. I walked into the heart of chaos to challenge the absurdity of existence, and for that I was torn in two. My modest achievement. The Fokrul Asael, he muttered, glancing back at Erastus. They cannot be permitted to actually succeed in what they seek to do. You must know that. The Asael do not kneel before gods, not even elder ones.
Their arrogance is boundless. The errant said, baring his teeth. We will exploit that, dear Knuckles. Mayhap they will slit the throats of the gods, but we are another matter.
We will need Korul before this ends, I think.
Of us all, he best understands expedience,
Erastus agreed.
Expedience?
and Mael, and Olar. That hag has her own plans, but she will fail.
With a nudge?
It won't be hard, the errant replied. A nudge? More like a tap, the gentlest of prods.
Don't be premature in that. She'll serve well as a distraction for as long as possible.
He was touching his socket again. Seeking benediction? Unlikely.
Azath, said Sir Trulath, that was unexpected. How deep is your wound, Erastus?
More indignation than blood, the errant answered, grimacing. I was sorely used. Someone will pay for that.
Life stealer?
Ah, Knuckles, do you think me a fool? Challenge that one? No. Besides, there were children involved. Human children.
Easier targets, then.
Erastus must have caught something in Setrul's tone, for his face darkened.
Don't you dare think them innocent!
I don't, Setrul replied, thinking of his own unholy spawn. But it was Featherwitch who swallowed your eye, was it not? And you say that you killed her with your own hands. How then?
Icarium's stupid gambit in Letharus. It's why I never found her soul. No, she carried my eye straight to him, the rotting bitch. And now he's spat out fledgling warrens and made of my eye a finest for an Azath. He remains the single force of true unpredictability in this scheme.
Calm assures us otherwise.
I don't trust her.
Finally, friend, you begin to think clearly again.
Just so, he said.
Erastus glanced over at Kilmandaros.
Can we not feed her or something? Hasten this healing?
No. The ward's rake and the other's set were profound. Tearing them down damaged her deeply in ways no sorcerer's healing can reach. Leave her in peace.
Erastus hissed.
Besides, Sir Trulath continued, they're not all in place yet. You know that.
I have waited so long for this. I want us to be ready when the time comes.
And so we shall, Erastus.
The errant's single eye fixed on Sir Trulath.
Calm is not the only one I do not trust.
There will be ashes and death, but survivors will emerge. They always do. They will understand the necessity of blood. We shall be unchallenged, Erastus.
Yet you sought to betray me, you and Kilmandaros.
Betray? No. We dismissed you.
That is how I see it. How can I not?
What you fail to understand, old friend, said Sir Trulath, is that I don't care about being unchallenged. I don't care about a new world rising from the wreckage of this one. I am happy enough to wander the ruins, to mock those mortals who would try again. He gestured. Leave the world to its wild ignorance. At least life was simple then. I turned my back on worshippers because I was done with them, disgusted with them. I don't want what we had, Erastus.
But I do, Setch.
And you are welcome to it.
What of your children?
What of them?
Where do you see Upon in the world to come?
I don't see them anywhere, Sir Trulath said.
Erastus drew a sharp breath.
You will kill them?
What I made, I can unmake.
Your words please me, Knuckles. Indeed, I am relieved.
It wasn't much of a life, my children, was it? I doubt you will object overmuch. Prod and pull, yes, but in the end, after thousands and thousands of years of that pathetic game, what is achieved, learned, by anyone? Chance is a miserable bitch, a hard bastard. It shows a smile, but it is a wolf's smile. What is learned? Only that every ambition must kneel to that which cannot be anticipated. And you can duck and dodge for only so long. It'll take you down in the end. A man slips the noose. A civilization steps from the path of its own hubris. Once, twice, thrice even, but what of the 20th time, the 50th? Triumph falters, it always does. There was never a balance. After all, common sense will tell you it's far easier to push than it is to pull.
How does Kilmandaros feel, Erastus asked, about killing her own children? Sechul Lath glanced over at his mother, and then back at his companion.
Don't you understand anything, Erastus? She doesn't feel anything.
After a moment, the lone eye shied away.
Now I think you understand.
What does the child want that you did not have first? What do you own that the child does not want? Badal had awoken this morning with these questions echoing in her head. The voice was a woman's and then a man's, both delivered in the same abject tones of despair. She sat in the sun's light as it bled in from the window, banishing the chill in her bones as would a lizard or a serpent, and struggled to understand the night's visions, the dark, disturbing voices of strangers saying such terrible things.
It is what is passed on, I suppose. I think I see that.
She glanced over to where Sadik sat on the floor, his collection of useless objects arrayed around him, a lost look on his oddly wrinkled face.
Like an old man with his life's treasure, only he's forgotten how to count.
But what they owned, what they had, was not necessarily a good thing, a thing of virtue. Sometimes what they had was poison, and the child's hunger knew no different. How could it? And so the crimes passed on from one generation to the next.
Until they destroy us. Yes, I see that now. My dreams are wise, wiser than me. My dreams sing the songs of the quitters, clever in argument, subtle in persuasion. My dreams are warning me.
She turned away from the sun's light and faced the chamber.
Is everyone ready?
Sadik looked up guiltily and then nodded. Badal twisted back and leaned out on the window ledge, craning round in order to see the western end of the plaza. Rut was there, withheld in his arms. Others waited in the shadows of the surrounding buildings, as if figures on friezes had stepped out from their stone worlds. It was just as well. They'd eaten all the fruit on the city's trees.
And the crystal was stealing our souls. Then it is time. Leave those things behind, Sadik.
Instead, he began gathering them up. A flash of anger hissed through Badal, followed by fear. She didn't understand either. Sighing, she dropped down from the ledge.
There will be shards, diamonds, rubies, and opals. We will begin dying again.
The boy looked at her with knowing eyes. She sighed a second time.
There are fathers among us now. We must watch them carefully, Sadik, in case they find father thoughts.
To that he shook his head, as if to deny her words.
No, Badal, he said in his broken voice. They just care for the young ones. So few words from you, Sadik. I'd thought you mute. What other things awaken in you behind those old man's eyes, that old man's face?
She left the room. Sadik followed, his bag of useless things in his arms like a newborn babe. Down the sharp-edged steps, through the cool air of the hidden corridors, and then outside, into the blinding heat. Badal walked without hesitation to where stood Rut, who now watched her approach with hooded eyes. As she drew closer, the other children edged into the sunlight, clumped in their makeshift families. Hands were held, rag ends clutched, legs embraced. She paused in her journey. She had forgotten how many still lived. Forcing herself on, she walked until she stood before Rut, and then she spun round and raised her arms out to the sides.
The city spits us out. We are sour and we are bitter to taste. The blind feeders on us turn away as they gorge, as they devour all that was meant for us, all we thought to inherit, because we wanted what they had, because we thought it belonged to us, just as it did to them. They looked away as they ate our future, and now the city's walls steal our wants and spit out what remains. It's not much, just something sour, something bitter to taste. And this is what you taste in your mouths. Something sour, something bitter.
Rut stared at her for a long moment, and then he nodded and set out along the wide central avenue, westward into the glass desert. Behind him, the snake uncoiled itself from its months-long slumber. This was something the snake understood, and Badal could see it, in the steady, unhurried strides of the children trooping past, in their set faces, bleakness settling with familiarity in thin, wan features.
We know this. We have learned to love this. To walk, to slither beneath the fists of the world. We are the snake reborn.
In time they reached the city's edge and looked out on the flat, glittering wastes.
Suffering's comfort, like a dead mother's embrace.